Good afternoon. I'll call the Thursday, February 3rd meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules to order. Welcome, members, to our first meeting of the 2011 regular session. And just so that where you can see that you're paying attention, our committee administrator looks a little different than when we met at organizational days in January. We have the very capable Erin Sealer here with us, and she will be throughout the session, so we're very delighted to have her here. And Mike Riley is our committee assistant, so welcome to both of them. Members, we have three bills to hear. They're posted for public hearing only, and I think that because we have slightly different people signed up to testify, we'll take them one at a time. Just so the audience will know, we have a combination of people doing work on their computers up here and people with paper bill files, and that is the transition to the paperless new world that we are attempting to migrate towards. So if you see people on their computers, they are not playing solitaire. They are concentrating on your testimony. So I'll begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 270. And Erin, would you tell us briefly about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 270 modifies provisions related to campaign finance penalties, establishes a cap on civil penalties for failure to file statement or include required information, changes the period for assessing civil penalties for violations of campaign finance reporting requirements, declares emergency as effective upon passage. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the measure.
I can help you scratch that edge.
Great, thank you. And it looks like we have two witnesses signed up on this bill, and that is Steve Trout and Kevin Neely. Would you both like to come forward? And welcome to Senate Rules.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kevin Neely, and I'm the president of C&E Systems, which is a campaign finance company, among other things. It's certainly a large component of what we do. Chair Rosenbaum, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and for hearing these bills. They're of keen interest to my firm, and I've spoken with my colleagues who do what I do around the state, and while I'm not going to say they support the bill, so I don't know if they do or not, but I have worked on these issues collegially with them throughout the past several months. The first bill is Senate Bill 270, as the administrator said. This bill does a couple of things. The most important thing from my perspective is that it places a cap of $5,000 per month on civil penalties that may be assessed for violations of Oregon's campaign finance law. These are just the civil penalties. I don't dabble and hope to never dabble in the criminal area of the law. Well, I shouldn't say that. I've dabbled before in that, but I don't do that anymore. So now I just worry about the civil side of things. And a couple reasons that I think this is a really critical improvement to Oregon's elections law. As you all know, the elections law and the campaign finance reporting system has changed dramatically over the last 5 years, 4 years, really, since 2007. In 2007, ORSTAR was implemented. It went to a constant stream of reporting, and the likelihood that committees would incur penalties substantially increased. I came to you and sat, I think, in this very same chair in the 2009 session and requested that we put a 10% cap on the penalties. And indeed, the legislature and the governor signed a bill that capped penalties at a 10% of the amount of the penalty. That was a substantial improvement in the law, and I think really mirrored the fact that the reporting regime was far more rigorous than it had ever been in the past. In the course of making that 10% change, the legislature did away with the caps that had previously existed. Back in the quarterly filing era, there was a $10,000 per report cap on penalties. That is now gone with the passage of legislation in 2009. I believe it's gone. That's certainly my reading of the law. What this bill would do is institute a new cap of $5,000 a month. That's not an arbitrary amount. Kevin's committees sometimes get $5,000 penalties and he wants to avoid them. That's not the case here. That amount is based on what the penalty structure was in the past. In the most rigorous regime, in the old system, you had to file 6 reports, 4 quarterly reports in a year, and 2 supplemental reports, as many of you who are around, I think maybe all of you were filing reports in those days, you'll remember that. So the maximum penalty you could get in the course of a year was $60,000. Now, I think it's safe to say that that's an amount that that certainly would compel someone to file things. I don't think we've ever seen anyone not file things and show a willingness to pay the penalty. So this $5,000 a month would, again, equal that $60,000 a year of total liability that a treasurer may have for a committee. So that's why that's the number that this bill has in it. That number is $50,000 higher than we would have seen in the past over a biennial period, because in the old filing system, you had 1 report to file in a non-election year, 6 reports in an election year, a total of $70,000 liability over 2 years. Now we're going to have $120,000 worth of liability over 2 years. Why is this important? One, under the current law, a committee that failed to report an extremely large contribution or expenditure could have unlimited liability. Frankly, you could end up with a penalty in the election law arena that's higher than the cost, the restitution cost of the crime of murder. It's a really surprising change. When we were making the 10% change last time, I'm sorry that I forgot to try and keep that cap in there, of at least some cap. That cap is important because there are volunteer treasurers out there. There aren't a lot of volunteer treasurers anymore, but there are volunteer treasurers out there. And I think one of the reasons that there have been fewer treasurers that agree to volunteer is because the liability is so high here in Oregon. Even with this $5,000 cap, I challenge anybody to find a state that has higher liability for treasurers than Oregon has, at least higher civil liability. And so at the end of the day, what Senate Bill 270 does is it sets a cap on the penalties at $5,000 a month, which I think is a sufficient cap that will, again, continue to apply pressure to committees to ensure that they accurately and timely file their transactions. But it doesn't provide, the system isn't so draconian that it causes treasurers to shy away from doing this work, though I suspect there are still treasurers that, when threatened with a $5,000 penalty, would certainly blanch. The other big change that this bill does or makes is it applies those penalties based on the month in which the transaction should have occurred. That is a big shift in the way that the law works right now, and it's something that you guys should definitely have at the forefront of your minds as you consider this legislation. Why is that written in that way? Well, I thought it was important to discourage campaign committees from storing up mistakes until they had a whole big pile of mistakes and then filing them all in June or July in 1 month and knowing that they only had to pay a $5,000 penalty for that 1 month. Now, if you were to file 100 transactions and they were late transactions from January, February, March, and April, your penalty would be based on the transaction count in January, the transaction count in February, the transaction count in March, and the transaction count in April, instead of all of those being applied in July when you filed them or June when you filed them. So now you can't just hold your penalties. I think this provides a very strong encouragement to file any late transactions as quickly as you can. Whereas under the current system, it's possible to hold those until you get a whole bunch of them, file them all at once, and then if there were a cap on the penalties, it would be capped at that point. So those are the two big changes in this law, or in this bill, I think are absolutely critical changes. Again, for me, the highest priority is putting a cap in place so that treasurers don't have unlimited liability. My firm has never had a huge penalty. Well, I shouldn't say that. We've had our share of penalties, and we've had some big ones. But this cycle, there have been $30,000 penalties, $20,000 penalties. $15,000 penalties. And while I'm sure those penalties were justified, my guess is that they were also for honest mistakes that those committees made. And so this would change that. As I said, a subsidiary effect of the bill is, I think, would incentivize filing those as quickly as possible, because it, instead of applying the penalty based on the month it's filed, it applies the penalty based on the month in which it should have been filed. Thank you.
So why don't we hear from the panel, and then we'll open it up for questions. Mr. Trout?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Steve Trout, State Election Director. We are neutral on this bill. We recognize that honest mistakes are made, and we want to make sure that volunteer treasurers are able to exist in Oregon and to be able to assist in small or large campaigns and whatever. So we're always looking at ways to make the system better so that it applies whether you're a big committee with a professional treasurer or a committee with a volunteer treasurer. The penalty matrix continues to be adjusted as we learn more things, so that's I think to Kevin's cap on the limit, that at least has a limit per month, and I appreciate his drafting the bill in a way that he can't aggregate all of those into 1 month to minimize the penalty. As far as the dollar amount that's been proposed as the cap, we really don't have an opinion on that, other than we don't want it to be small enough that it's just a cost of doing business. We want to make sure that there's some teeth there, and would leave that up to your discretion.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
How widespread is this problem of aggregating a bunch of potential fines and putting them all into 1 month? How widespread is that?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, the potential is always there. Right now, with the way that the penalties are created, I'm not sure that there's a real incentive to do that. But Kevin might have from his chair a more perspective on how that tool could be used.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think that the law. There was a $10,000 cap up until just recently. I think that cap went away in, I don't know, whenever that legislation went into effect. And so there was a small window of time when you could conceivably do that. I don't think that it was a problem. I think, again, this is mostly in this bill as hopefully not to address a problem, but to address a problem before it happens. I think that's the reason I put it in there. And it also, I looked at many, many states. And in many states, that's how it works as well. I will tell you that in all of the 27 states I looked at, Oregon's penalty, even under this law, is in most instances 10 times higher than any other state. The only state that's even close, California and Colorado. I think there's reasons for that. Oregon also is one of the few states that has absolutely no limits on giving. And so it's justifiable to have the high penalty, but in my view, there's a huge risk. I would hate to see a committee incur a fine of $100,000. That would put my business out of business with an honest mistake, and it would certainly put treasurers around the state underwater for no good reason.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
So let me understand. So in 2009, there was a cap put on this particular issue. And this bill, correct? Yes? From the bill that you did last time?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, in 2009, the bill capped the maximum penalty. It shifted it from 100% of the amount of the transaction to 10%, and it eliminated the cap.
Okay. And that's been in effect for less than 2 years, and now we're going to slap this massive, we're going to keep up with as big a fine as possible to scare treasurers from being treasurers. Right? I mean, that's what we're doing?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, my hope is to actually to create a ceiling. Right now, there is no ceiling. So if I made a mistake, or if you or your committee made a mistake on a $100,000 expense, that could generate, obviously, after 20 days, a $10,000 penalty. Under this law, that penalty would be capped at $5,000.
Bought that motorhome for you with
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are some civil penalties that can be paid out of campaign funds, and others that would be personal liability for the treasurer or the candidate. Does this would this limit apply to both types of civil fines?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick. I don't know the answer to that question. That what I do know is that there's a small number of civil penalties that can are only payable by the treasurer or by the candidate personally. I'm not going to hazard a guess. That's something I can easily get back to you on and give the answer to.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll get an answer to that question. We can get it probably through this to you through the staff. And Senator Beyer.
I'm trying to play this one out, Senator Ferriero. Tell me again, so what is the maximum fine? What could it be? It's 10% per amount of the contribution up to, you're saying, whatever the number is, 5,000 or something? Or how does it work?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, is your interest how it would work, how it would be applied under this bill, or how it works now? Or would you like me to give you, give you a very quick both. I'll give you an example. So a ballot initiative campaign, I think that's probably, or a gubernatorial race, where the dollar numbers can be very high. A ballot measure campaign is probably a better example, because there you would more likely see a volunteer treasurer. A ballot initiative campaign has one major funder. That major funder wires them $2 million. They don't tell the committee when they wired the money. They just wire them $2 million. The committee looks at their bank statement 7, 8, 10 days later, sees that wire in there, say it's 10 days later and we're in a 7-day reporting period. Now we have a $2 million gift that's been made. It's 3 days late. It's subject to 0.5% per day penalty. So that's $10,000 a day penalty. I hope that's right, because I do math for a living. It's pretty close to that. $10,000 a day penalty. So under the current law, there's no way around that penalty. You would be assessed a $30,000 penalty, plus whatever other late transactions you had in the course of that month. Under this law, that penalty would be capped at $5,000, provided that those 3 days were all in the same month. Now, if unfortunately that wire came in on the 31st, and then you didn't get it reported until but worst case scenario, you're talking about $5,000 to $10,000 penalty. So it would save that volunteer treasurer or the committee in this instance $25,000. At the same time, I'm confident that a $5,000 penalty would be felt by the committee. There's no question. Those are big-time penalties. As a reference point, I did ask the Secretary of State to produce a list since 2007 of all of the penalties that have been incurred that exceeded $5,000, and you can count them on both hands. But there are some big ones in there. There are some very big ones in there, and in fact, in one of those instances, it is a client of mine, and I can tell you that he tried to do everything right, and he just didn't get one button pushed. Posted everything to the system, didn't get that final file button pushed, had to pay $34,000. That's what the law says, and that's a challenge for him. That's why this cap is an important piece of the puzzle. Now, I can't tell you whether, my guess is he still would be paying a big fine, because under this law, again, it spreads it out over the course of those 12 months. He may still have had to pay a large fine like this, but this would provide some basic protection. And I would also tell you that we've tried to get E&O insurance at my firm, errors and omissions insurance, and under the current state of the law, I can't get insured in a way that I can afford. And so if I even can get insurance, and I think that this, I'm not sure that this will allow us to get that insurance, but I think this will certainly give me a foothold with the insurers when I go back to talk to them.
And my understanding is that the mitigating circumstances, you can appeal these fines, but it's basically that a treasurer has to be hospitalized or dead or something. I mean, that's, or some sort of circumstance so drastic that would have made it humanly impossible to have not made this error. So it's not very easy to win on appeal. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, thank you. I'll take that one. There are mitigating circumstances that they can be raised in front of a hearings officer. It's not quite as drastic as you explain, but there are serious steps that have to be taken to achieve that mitigating circumstance. I believe there's five different categories that that those fall into, but you know, we're pretty pretty sticklers to the rules and leave that to the hearings officers to make sure that we're not abusing our power under the statute.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I understand you're trying to put some caps and liabilities here, and frankly, I'm less concerned about those large volume statewide races or ballot measures. But I'm real concerned that we've moved the system in ways trying to protect it, you know, keep it open, where we've almost made it impossible for volunteer treasurers to, you know, particularly in local races and some of that in legislative races, it's very hard for a volunteer to do this anymore, and it's not that simple. The system is not that simple to understand. And while there may be room for mitigating factors, I think you're right, Madam Chair. You almost have to be in the hospital for you to qualify. There just isn't much discretion there, which I don't think is correct. I'm bothered by that we've gone zestfully too far and are limiting the process for a lot of people to be involved.
Thank you for that comment. I don't see any further questions or comments from the committee, so why don't you stay put, and I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 270, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 271.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 271 establishes Campaign Finance Fund. Campaign Finance Fund consists of monies collected from campaign finance civil penalties for the purpose of operating the electronic filing system, or STAR, declares emergencies effective upon passage. This measure does have a subsequent referral of the Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you, Erin, for that explanation. And we do have Steve Trout signed up to testify on this bill, as well as Kevin Neely, and then we have one other witness in the audience. And you're welcome to come forward now, too, Janice Thompson. So in whatever order you'd like to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll kick this one off as well. Just to make it clear that this bill is not at the request of the Secretary of State's office. This bill is a bill I have spoken with the Secretary and Mr. Pack in that office about this bill. A couple of things. I think Senator Beyer's comments a second ago are a nice segue into my discussion of this piece of legislation. ORSTAR is a really great system. I think if you went to most people around the nation, particularly citizens, the media, those folks, they would tell you that we have a great system here. That being said, like any great system, it can always be improved on. And I do think there are some basic functionality issues that we've talked about with the Secretary of State's office for years. And the response that we consistently get is there just aren't the resources to make these changes. And I absolutely believe that there aren't the resources. Every session, in fact, bills passed that caused them to have to make mandatory changes to the state filing system, and those suck up the very small number of staff they have available to do a lot of work on this system. And, of course, the system isn't just the campaign finance system. It's the election system in general. And so I'm very sensitive to the demands of the time that we request of their programmers. And what this bill does is it creates a fund. That fund is in fact, financed by the very penalties we just talked about a second ago. Some would say, isn't that the fox guarding the hen house? And as the hen who pays a lot of fines, and my firm has paid probably over the course of the last 2 years about $15,000 in penalties, I would much rather have those resources reinvested in making the system easier to use and more foolproof than I would have those resources just plop into the general fund. Now, this is a tough year to say something like that because obviously there are incredible demands, unprecedented demands on the general fund. I understand that, and as I said, this is this may be a bill that takes multiple sessions to happen if it ever happens at all. But again, for me, what is important here is the principle. If you make a mistake, and that mistake is because you were incapable of keeping the books in the right way, and you have to give some money to the Secretary of State's office or to pay a civil penalty, that money ought to be reinvested in a way that makes the system easier to use and makes it easier for me as a treasurer or a volunteer treasurer to reconcile the books. One example, we've requested a running balance sheet with Orstar. Wouldn't need to be seen by the public, but it's something that a treasurer could access so that we could just check off all the transactions that we've got in our system and make sure they mirror the transactions in the Secretary of State's office. That's complicated programming, but it's critical if you're a treasurer to be able to ensure that the bottom line matches in our books, in Orstar, and at the bank. And right now, if that bottom line gets out by 2 pennies, we have to download every transaction and compare it against every transaction we have with the bank. And it's a very time-consuming and complicated procedure. And so, again, it's a simple improvement from the perspective of it would make the system a lot better, but it's a complicated improvement in the sense that it would take their programmers a lot of time and energy, and those are resources that they need to invest in the mandates that they have. Hopefully what this bill would do is give them a little bit of additional funding that they could use either to contract out that work or augment their staff in some very modest way. I don't think we're talking about a lot of money. I don't know exactly how much, but I would be shocked if it was even $200,000 over the course of a biennium. My guess is it's certainly under $250,000 in penalties that they collect over the course of the biennium, and if 270 were to pass, that number would be even smaller. So what this bill does is create that revolving fund, allows the Secretary of State to access it for the purposes of improving the campaign finance system or maintaining the campaign finance system. It's a modest amount of money. This may not be the session to do it, but if there is room for a shift of $2,000 to help offset some of these important improvements, it would be useful. Thank you.
Steve?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director. Again, with respect to Senate Bill 271, we're neutral on this. We're not obviously opposed to this type of fund, but not advocating that either. We recognize perception issues and have some concern with that. The one thing I want to make sure that is on the record, though, we want to make sure that this doesn't supplant any of our existing revenues to be able to perform our regular election and campaign finance functions. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Janice Thompson, Common Cause, Oregon. I support the bill, kind of recognizing the pros and cons of creating, these dedicated funds that are separate from the general fund. I mean, that's, there's advantages and disadvantages of that. To me, I think the main point of this bill is the need to recognize that a major infrastructure investment was made in Orstar, and that kind of investment needs support for maintenance and improvements, and that requires resources. And if this bill is one way to kind of make sure that that occurs, great. But I think the general message I want to convey is we're talking about an investment that we want to kind of, you know, keep up. Resources are required. It's a good system. It does need maintenance like any system, and there's always opportunities for improvement. And that just needs resources. Either through this bill or just through the regular budgeting process.
Okay. Any questions?
I have some comments, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Farrelly.
I think the reticence of Mr. Trout speaks volumes to me, but he did refer to perception. And I think he's got a good point there. I'd like to just expand on the merit of the bill in terms of logic is unimpeachable. The merit of the bill in terms of its actual effect and its perception might be a disaster. And let me use other agencies as an example of how this could be a disaster. In good times, when many of our agencies are generating a lot of fee revenue and from permit processing and services delivered to people that are needing these services from the state of Oregon to do whatever it is that they do, people really don't have much of a problem with fees. You know, they just build it into the cost of doing business. When the economy doesn't go so well and tips over, there isn't the revenue from people asking for services, and then the agency, having been weaned off of some of the general fund, finds itself in a downward spiral. And so what happens is the emphasis goes to enforcement, because enforcement generates revenue. And maybe not an intentional thing, but it turns our state service providers into bounty hunters. And if you want to look at some of the case examples, go to look at DEQ and DSL and some of the other agencies that we got out there that provide great services, very valuable services, protecting the environment and enforcing, you know, the requirements. But at the end of the day, without fees from expansion type permitting, the only source of revenue is from enforcement, and we're getting more than we need right now in enforcement. It's killing people. So I would say that Mr. Trout's comments about, well, we wouldn't want to see the legislature starve the agency from the resources that we're currently getting, you know, in consideration of this fee generation. But I can almost guarantee you any loose change around here is going to get snaffled up pretty fast. So I would say that is exactly the problem with this great idea in practice. So, and let me also say that there's another case that can be made for the system that requires either the users of ORSTAR or the agency to come to the legislature annually now, not biannually, but annually, and make the business case for specific improvements that are needed. And there's two reasons to do that business case, Madam Chairman. One is that it either rises or falls on its own merit. You know, the people really think about the business case, and that develops a constituency, and that pushes it forward or kills it. The other thing is that it educates people in the process as to what the new changes are going to look like and feel like, and they get a chance to poke at it and ask the questions and vet it in the hallways and think about it. If you give an automatic funding source to the agency and charge it with the mission of improvement, it will do that. But what we'll have is a bracket creep, an improvement creep. Changes will be implemented in the system, and then the agency's going to have to sort of sell those changes informationally out to the public by whatever means, rather than coming in and making the business case in a public forum. So I would say I don't want bounty hunters out there, not suggesting that anybody would become one, and I don't want folks engaging in sort of creeping, you know, improvement creep that disconnects that supply line of information from the people that have to use ORSTAR and the ones whose lives are affected by that. And I guess I would not want to see the agency put in a situation where legislators, in their inspiration to find revenue sources, start sweeping monies that are general fund monies dedicated to supporting ORSTAR and the elections division and those kinds of things, because, hey, they got their own revenue source. So, you know, that's sort of three strikes for me, Madam Chairman. I would be no on this concept to advertise that.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 271. And I think the witnesses can stay put. And we have one more bill, and I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 272.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 272 removes unfulfilled pledge, subscription, agreement, or promise to make contribution from the definition of contributions.
Thank you for that explanation. And please go ahead, whoever would like to go first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Kevin Neely, CNE Systems. Senate Bill 272, as Ms. Seiler just said, does away with pledges in the election finance system, in the campaign finance system. I asked to have this bill introduced because as I look at the expanse of the campaign finance law here in Oregon, there's not a lot of gray areas. We've talked about that already. There's not a lot of gray areas in how penalties apply. There's not a lot of gray areas, period. One of the big gray areas that still exists in the law is what is a pledge? I suspect if I asked all of you individually, what would you characterize as a pledge, you would all give me a different answer as to what is a collectible amount of money that has been offered to your campaign committee. And because we'd all give a different answer, that's reflected in ORSTAR. Some people record a large number of pledges. I said in my testimony that of the 2,160 pledges that have been reported over the course of the last 5 years, 4 years, 300 of them were by one committee. Over 10% of all the pledges were by one committee. And that committee clearly has a very aggressive view of what a pledge is. Other committees, I don't think any of your committees amongst the five of you have reported a pledge, or maybe one or two pledges in the course of all of the last, you know, since 2007 when ORSTAR started tracking these. Because there's such an incredible divide between what one person views as a pledge and what another person views as a pledge, and because so few pledges are reported, period, it seems sensible to take that gray area out of the law. I think that the pledge system is a artifice of the old filing system, where you could get a pledge of a huge amount, $100,000, on the day, the last day of a filing period, and then you wouldn't have to talk about that actual contribution coming in for another 3 months, because there was that much time between when you got the amount of money and when you reported the amount of money. That will never be the case anymore unless you plan on paying a large penalty. Right now, that money gets reported within 30 days or 7 days if you're going to be in compliance with the law. And so it seems like the necessity to record these pledges has diminished, and taking them out of the campaign finance law removes the gray area that treasurers have to grapple with. And it also removes the gray area that the Secretary of State Elections Division would have to grapple with if a complaint came in about, you know, was this pledge properly reported? Should a pledge have been reported? Again, if we all had the same definition, or I suppose a different approach could have been to clearly define what a pledge is in the law, I took the easier route, which was just to take these out of the system altogether. It seems to me that this is, to some extent, the appendix of the campaign finance law. It's there. It's hard to know what it does. It may do something, but the system works just as well without it. And so I just, again, would hope that the committee would recognize that this will save treasurers time. It'll save you an opportunity to get a penalty, and it will streamline the campaign finance system. Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
She was the end.
Oh,
sure.
No, wait.
Okay.
You want to wait?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, Senate Bill 272. We are also neutral. recognize that there are many operational problems with enforcing the pledges. Some people are reporting them, some people don't. We don't know if they've happened or not, whether it was a handshake, whether it was a voice deal. It poses a lot of challenges for us. With our limited resources, we'd rather focus on the more significant campaign contributions, expenditures, and making sure that those are done correctly. With respect to the pledges, it's very difficult to know what's going on, to be able to identify them, to be able to know when someone's reporting them or not reporting them, and so we would just like to use those resources to focus on the more significant transactions that we are that we track with the Thorstar.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Janice Thompson, Common Cause Oregon again. Chair Rosenbaum and committee, we support this, I think, for two reasons. One is, I think this is, the need for this is reduced because of the switch from kind of like the report-based system to kind of more the continuous reporting. And just over the years, it just has always been... I've recognized that people have had difficulties, like, what exactly is this? And that's always raises enforcement issues. And, you know, from a money and politics perspective, when we do kind of track the money, I mean, I ignore the pledges. I kind of like only, you know, when I'm kind of analyzing some campaign, unless it's the occasional time, you know, there's some really big pledge, I kind of focus on, you know, once it's really in the door. So I think that actually kind of also speaks to just, you know, that issue here. If this bill is not adopted, I do want to identify one of those little, you know, improvements to ORSTAR, kind of relating back to the topic of 271, which is right now when a pledge shows up on ORSTAR and then the subsequent contribution is recorded, that the contribution that's honoring that pledge, if you kind of hit on the transaction, there's a clear identification of like the pledge transaction. But in ORSTAR, it's not set up to also go back into the original pledge to say, oh, this was honored. So actually, you know, when I have looked at these pledges, and it was nice for Mr. Neely to do the analysis of how many there are, because it means I didn't have to do that. It's actually in ORSTAR, you kind of have to know if the pledge was honored. You can't, like, look at the pledge and know for sure whether or not it's been honored. So this is something I've talked over with the Elections Division. They haven't had the resources to do it. It's not quite clear that it was enough of an issue to bother. But just to identify that if this is not removed, that, you know, the system is not quite working to help people keep track of that anyway. Finally, on this point, I wanted to identify a concern about a pledge kind of situation from the expenditure side. Starting to see post-election reporting of expenditures for campaign staff and consultants when that is the only payment. So it's not like a win bonus over and above payments made during the campaign that's getting reported along the way. But there seems to be some examples starting to pop up of a post-election payment that seems to be honoring a pledge for payment if the campaign is successful. And what that means is, you know, the person's been working throughout the campaign without ever showing up in ORSTAR, you know, kind of some dollar value of the effort of that's being reported. So even if we kind of deal with this pledge situation on the contribution side with this bill, I just want to identify there may be some need down the line to address pledge of payments that are starting to pop up. So I'll just keep you posted on that analysis. But I just wanted to go on record that even if you kind of deal with the pledge, you know, you kind of do away with the pledge option on contributions, the mirror image on the expenditure side still may need to be addressed.
So, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's an interesting one. I would think that that would either have to show up in physics. The effort was expended, so it either shows up as an expense or an in-kind. Should.
I would agree, but I'm just telling you, I'm starting to see, like the day after the campaign, something is reported, and you know, and it's not a win bonus. I mean, when I think about a win bonus, I think about somebody who's been working all the way, all through, and it's been showing up, and yeah, there's a win bonus. So, I would think that either, if there's no payment, that it should be being reported as in-kind contribution, recognizing that it's really important that there be a distinction. So we're talking about somebody who's like working, you know, significant time on an in-kind basis. So we're not talking about like in-kinding, you know, the volunteer who comes as just a phone bank. So that's where it gets tricky. The other option could be if it's a pledge, it's not going to be honored, or it would only be honored after the campaign. Then does that mean the in-kind contribution is amended to reflect there's been a payment? You know, if there's a pledge, is it an accounts payable? So it's, I'm not proposing a solution. I'm just identifying, I'm just identifying that this concept of pledge, even if we do away with it on the contribution side, may still need to be addressed with this interesting little trend that's starting to pop up.
So, yes, Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To your knowledge, either in the any of you, has anyone ever been fined for failure to report a pledge?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, not to my knowledge, but I've been here 18 months. Mr. Neely might have more experience.
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, I think the answer to that question is that to get fined, you'd have to file it late. And I think based on the number of pledges that have been recorded over the years, very few people would file that pledge late again. I just think that's an unlikely thing to have happen. Now, I see Janice is stepping up here, and maybe she'll talk about the City of Portland example. The City of Portland had a unique situation with their voter-owned elections, and in that instance, there was a pretty clear mandate that pledges had to be reported. And so we were pretty diligent on that front. But, again, I think that the answer to your question is no. No fine has ever been, at least we've never been fined, and I think we filed fully one-third of the pledges that have been filed. But they've all been filed timely.
Senator Burdick, I actually wasn't going to bring up Portland, but I've been kind of tracking, you know, the political money since 1998, 1999, and I think the other scenario where we might have seen it if there was a complaint, an allegation that, you know, there was a pledge made, something that should have been reported, and so since I've started kind of just looking at all this and being aware of, you know, things that come up in the press, I can't recall one accusation that, oh, this, you know, there was a pledge that should have been reported. So I think that speaks to this is just a tricky area for people and one where enforcement is also difficult.
Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, could we develop some sort of a penalty program for people who fail to honor their pledges? I wouldn't mind sharing some of that revenue with the... Madam Chair, I like this concept. I'm going to call this the talk is cheap bill. You know, it's hard to file a cocktail napkin. But pledges, until it's a promissory note signed, until it's a check cashed, it really isn't in play, you know, and it used to be that people would try to game the system with a pledge of a large amount of money and show that as a payable or a receivable or an asset in the campaign. And I think this bill just lets the hot air out of some campaigning and relieves the folks that have to track this in OrStar of a responsibility for literally tracking hot air.
Yeah, and plus, if I can follow up, Senator Ferriola, on that point, the point that you made that was troubling I hadn't thought about is that when you report a pledge and then the pledge comes through, maybe the only half of the money actually comes through, or maybe twice the money comes through, and you have no way of linking that back to the pledge.
Senator Burdick, in fact, the particular time in OrStar that helped me see that it makes it kind of difficult was a pledge made by, it was actually a big pledge by Lauren Parks, which is why it was big. That's why I was looking at it. And I think it was one of those pledges kind of early on to kind of, you know, illustrate that, you know, the resources are coming. So, in that particular, and actually, in that environment, there were some other pledges by that person that actually didn't come in. But this one particular one did come in, but it was actually honored by his company. So there was also this, like, how do you, you know, match these up when the name isn't even the same? So, you know, again, if you're going to keep pledges, OrStar should be, with all the copious resources that the Elections Division has to do these kinds of things, you know, you really should make sure that if a pledge is honored, that somehow the designation is kind of linked to the original pledge, or you're never really going to quite know. So, just yet another reason to just let this die.
Well, sounds like a consensus is emerging. So, I did want to ask one other question. I bet everybody up here but me knows the answer to this. But when pledges are reported, are they reflected in as a contribution in the balance of that committee? Or, I mean, do they count toward the cumulative balance of the committee? So, therefore, those committees have a somewhat inflated balance when these pledges are not fulfilled. And then I guess the further point is, if these pledges are fulfilled and there's no link between the original pledge and the actual contribution, then you have these inaccurate totals also for that reason. So,
they count twice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sounds like it. Okay, well, great. Thank you for that very illuminating testimony. And members, we don't have anybody else signed up. I don't see anyone in the audience rushing forward. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 272. And members, we stay tuned as far as the next meeting, which would be next Thursday. The Vice Chair and I have been consulting about this, and we are sort of waiting to see if we have enough to meet, because we don't want to take up your time if we do not have enough to constitute a full agenda. So we will let you know as quickly as we can. And with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.